Blog Talk Radio.
You walk into this room at your own risk, because it leads to the future. Not a future that will be, but one that might be. This is not a new world. It is simply an extension of what began in the old one. It has patterned itself after every dictator who has ever planted the ripping imprint of a boot on the face of history since the beginning of time. It has refinements, technological advances, and a more sophisticated approach to the destruction of human freedom. But like every one of the superstates that preceded it, it has one iron rule. Logic is an enemy and truth is a menace. This is Mr. Romney Wordsworth in his last 48 hours on Earth.
Understand that, Mr. Wordsworth? Your occupation, Mr. Wordsworth?
A librarian, sir.
A librarian. Having to do with books.
Yes, sir. Books.
Since there are no more books, Mr. Wordsworth, there are no more libraries. The field investigators classified you as obsolete. Your rights are as follows, Mr. Wordsworth. You are to be liquidated within a period of 48 hours.
You are obsolete, Mr. Wordsworth.
A lie. No man is obsolete.
You have no function, Mr. Wordsworth. You're an anachronism, like a ghost from another time.
I am nothing more than a reminder to you that you cannot destroy truth by burning pages.
You're a bug, Mr. Wordsworth, a crawling insect, an ugly, misformed little creature who has no purpose here, no meaning.
I am a human being.
Delusions, Mr. Wordsworth. Delusions that you inject into your veins with printer's ink. The narcotics that you call literature, poetry, essays of all kind, all of it an opiate. You have nothing but spindly limbs and a dream. And the state has no use for your kind.
I don't care. I tell you, I don't care. I'm a human being. I exist. And if I speak one thought aloud, that thought lives, even after I'm shoveled into my grave.
The Chancellor, the late Chancellor, was only partly correct. He was obsolete. But so is the state, the entity he worshipped. Any state, any entity, any ideology that fails to recognize the worth, the dignity, the rights of man, that state is obsolete.
And welcome to We're Hit Radio. I'm your host, Mark Matheny.
And, do you have the papers?
Sorry about that. I wanted to play that because this is what's happening to us as a people. The you always hear about the news recently, you know, since Trump started running for office under his campaign, we've heard about the deep state. And there was a, I didn't post it yet, or I think I did post it. There was a former, I think he was an FBI, CIA, one of the other agents, who is now going around the country and speaking. And between the deep state, because there's levels to them, the deep state having to do more so with the legal portion of the government that is working in collaboration with more nefarious elements of the government and outside elements outside of the government who work illegally to push for this one world government, if you will, for lack of a better term, the Novus Ordo Seclorum, which is the New World Order. And I've talked about that, you know, for a long time, for the last 9 years since I've been doing these shows. And part of the thing that I wanted to talk about today is several news events that are going on, because we know that the push for the impeachment of President Trump is still on. We know that the Mueller investigation is still going on. We know that the Democratic Party, several members of the Democratic Party, still want to impeach Trump. And then you have Maxine Waters, the super genius, said that they could just impeach people for whatever. Then, of course, you know, you still have the whole President Trump is mentally unsound and all of these things, when this guy is probably smarter than pretty much every one of these other people, especially on the left, who are coming against him. He's got more energy than all of them. He works way more than any of them do. And although he, you know, may not articulate some of his thoughts the way I'd like him to, possibly, he still gets his point across through tweets and through the news and so on, and has been pretty successful, except where the swamp creatures in the deep state and other elements are trying to make him fail, not allowing him to push the agenda. And, you know, we have talked about that. If you look at his agenda, obviously it is to, what does he say, make America great again, and to give us prosperity and freedom. Now, a lot of people may disagree with that, but that's what he's pushing for. And recently in the news, they've been talking a lot about net neutrality, and you know, this was basically pushed by during the Obama era, but now it is dead, no longer in effect, and the federal the moon is falling and the sky is falling, and the world's going to blow up now because we don't have net neutrality. The simple truth is, this Obama-era bill or this Obama-era regulation is a good thing that it's dead. And that's what I'm going to talk about. And there was a good article in the New American, which goes over it. It states, when the FCC voted on February the 26th, back in 2015, to reclassify the internet as a public utility under the Title II of the Communications Act of 1934, then Chairman Tom Wheeler promised that the so-called net neutrality would usher in an era of a free and open internet. Never mind, the entire scheme was built on one lie after another. For instance, the big lie is that the internet needed government regulation to make it free and open. And for anyone who's out there who doesn't understand that, it's just quite the opposite, that government regulations tend to bind you up, not free you. And we know that President Trump has been shooting down a lot of this regulation that is just burdensome and of no benefit to the American people. Now, just to illustrate the fact that more regulation brings basically more tyranny, let's take a moment to remember that the architects and the supporters of this net neutrality promised that there would be no rate regulation. And yet in 2016, Wheeler testified before Congress that a bill to keep the FCC from regulating the internet rates would kill internet or net neutrality and prevent the commission from enforcing its rules, because the power to set rates is part And it was similar to Obama's promise of no premium increases with the misnamed Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. Remember? But yet the rates are going off the charts with the same basic thing. And now this promise that net neutrality was not going to regulate content was just a lot of political hot air, according to the New American. In November of 2015, it was already apparent that politically conservative websites could find themselves on the crosshairs of censorship. Remember that? Censorship of a lot of conservative websites. And of course, Tom Wheeler promised that there was not going to be any regulation of content and no censorship. And the rules would allow the FCC to regulate content, but they would forbear and leave things alone, basically. Remember when President Obama was like, well, if you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. And then, of course, you couldn't. Well, this is the same thing, basically, is what they were saying. Well, if you like your internet, you can keep your internet. But that wasn't the case. And after they tried like two times to push for this net neutrality and it failed. And then Wheeler's most recent attempt began with an op-ed piece written in Wired. And in February 4th, the article was his attempt to make the case for the necessity of government regulation. And in it, he claimed that regulation of ISPs was needed to save the internet. And he also claimed that regulation of edge providers or companies that provide content to the internet would not be regulated, saying POSL assures the rights of internet users to go where they want, when they want. But then in late May, just before the new rules went into effect, the New American published an article addressing the dangers of net neutrality. And in that article, which they first published in a magazine form, and then they put on their website, they made the case for the greatest danger of so-called net neutrality is that it is another step toward big government censorship of the internet. And here's what they said in their article. They stated, while net neutrality has been sold to the American people as a plan to protect the internet, the truth is it is a plan to strip us of our liberties in the digital age. The internet has provided an amazing and irreplaceable platform for information and activism. It is truly a thorn in the flesh of big government when patriots use it to communicate and collaborate. In the digital age, there is no line of demarcation between digital freedom and other freedom. If the American people can be robbed of the internet as we know it, big government can more easily become bigger government. And so this is the big reason that if you are a patriot, a freedom-loving American, you should be happy that this Obama-era regulation was shot down. Because otherwise, people like myself and this radio show probably in the future would not exist, probably, or be highly censored or shut down or something. But this article goes on to say, after making much of the evils of throttling, blocking, and prioritization, Wheeler said his plan included bright line rules that would prevent those practices. Then he went on to say that even that would not be enough, and a general conduct rule would be needed to address the things not covered in the bright line rules. And The New American covered it, saying, Wheeler went on to say that his plan includes a general conduct rule to stop new and novel threats to the Internet. This means the action we take will be strong enough and flexible enough not only to deal with the realities of today, but also to establish ground rules for the as yet unimagined. Well, just what that means, it's who's to say? The new and novel threats to the Internet, what does that mean? And then Wheeler called the general conduct rule a catch-all standard and wrote it was necessary because the bright line bans on blocking, throttling, and paid prioritization will go a long way to prevent the virtuous cycle, he says, but not all the way. Gatekeeper power can be exercised through a variety of technical and economic means, and without a catch-all standard, it would be that, as Benjamin Franklin said, a little neglect may breed great mischief. Any person, he goes on to say, engaged in the provision of broadband internet access service insofar as such person is so engaged shall not unreasonably interfere with or unreasonably disadvantage end users' ability to select access and use broadband internet access service or lawful internet content application services, device or choice, etc., etc. So at least he was being honest when he called it a catch-all standard. But the unreasonable interference disadvantage standard, or the actual name of the general rule conduct rule, is indeed very vague. And there's no part of the Internet that it wouldn't allow the FCC to regulate. Basically, they want regulation of the Internet. This is in a nutshell. And this is what they attempted to do, but it was shot down, luckily. So given that latitude, there would have been little that the FCC could not regulate about the Internet. Given the propensity of government to expand on its own power, it's easy to see how the net neutrality was a threat to the freedom and openness of the Internet. And now, of course, you know, we don't have to worry about it. Bring that up again. Hopefully they won't. In past, the shooting down of the net neutrality passed by a 3-2 vote. It's been dismantled, basically. And one thing that really stands out in it is that the government regulations, no matter how bad they are rarely repealed. And this is according to the New American. He says, take Obamacare for an example. In the few years it has been in force, it's already become engraved in the American psyche, to the point that Republicans who railed against it, when it passed, are now trying to figure out how to repeal and replace rather than just repeal. In another comparison, it matters little how broken the Social Security scheme is. Few will ever talk about getting rid of it. And as such, it says there's a very narrow window of opportunity to kill net neutrality before it killed the free and open Internet it claimed to protect. The election of Donald Trump and his appointee of Ajit Pai, an outspoken opponent of net neutrality, to replace Wheeler as FCC chairman served to mark the beginning of the end of government regulation of the Internet. That end, it says, long predicted, came Thursday with firm finality. The vote removed not only net neutrality per se, but also the faulty logic on which it rested. Reclassification. Now that the Internet is no longer considered what it was, a public utility, the FCC lacks the authority to regulate it, period. So this is a good thing because, you know, I mean, if you really think about it, how much of your news you would be, if you didn't have the Internet, on the likes of CNN News and even Fox News to get your information only. And then, you know, they would control that narrative. And so the Internet, you know, is right. like this is, where that information can get out to you quick and unedited from the mainstream news, basically. It can come directly to you where they don't have a chance to put their spin upon it. And that's a good thing. And so, that just like the rest of the free market, basically, does better when it's not regulated. And while the doomsday prophets on the left are already predicting the dark ages of the internet with people unable to access content and communicate freely, the reality is that, as Ajit Pai said on Thursday's vote, the internet wasn't broken in 2015. We were not living in some digital dystopia. In fact, even supporters of net neutrality seem to realize that, even if they don't know, they realize it. And then it says, for instance, The Verge, an avid apologist for net neutrality, accidentally expressed that principle in an article that seems designated to create a sense of fear and dread at the death of net neutrality. The article, under the headline, What Public Libraries Will Lose Without Net Neutrality. The FCC will vote on a measure today that would repeal net neutrality and pave the way for the end of the free open internet as we've always known it. Huh. If we have always known a free open internet and net neutrality has been around only since 2015, obviously net neutrality isn't the cause. Right? So, if it was a free and open internet from the beginning, why do we need net neutrality now? See, they only need it to control you, to control the narrative, and to shut down those who will not go with that narrative but will go around that narrative and speak the truth. Technocrats can't control. And that's so it's a good thing that the internet, the net neutrality regulation has been shot down. And so that's a good thing, basically. So I wanted to report on that. Now, in other news, you got Mueller, who has obtained tens of thousands now of emails of the Trump transition team. And Zero Hedge reported on it that special counsel Robert Mueller's team has taken possession of many tens of thousands of emails from the Trump transition team obtained through the General Services Administration, the government agency responsible for hosting the transition email system, which used a PTT.gov address and which, according to a Trump lawyer, were improperly obtained through unlawful conduct. The trove of documents, which includes sensitive emails to and from Trump's son-in-law and top advisor Jared Kushner, comprised 12 email accounts, one of which reportedly contains about 7,000 emails. Mueller's team has reportedly been using this for Axios. It says the transition emails are said to include sensitive exchanges on matters that include potential appointments, gossip about the views of particular senators involved in the confirmation process, speculation about vulnerabilities of Trump nominees, strategizing about press statements, and policy planning on everything from war to taxes. So, now, transition officers had reportedly pre-sorted emails in anticipation of Mueller's investigation, separating privileged communications from the rest of the cache, and sources say they were surprised to learn of Mueller's use of the emails as they had been fully cooperative with the special counsel investigation. It says they ask us to waive NDAs, non-disclosure agreements, and things like that, a second source said. We never said no to anything. Now, transition team lawyer Corey Langhofer says the special counsel obtained unlawful conduct by the General Service Administration, and that was reported on Fox News. It says, in a letter obtained by Fox News and sent to House Senate committees on Saturday, the transition team's attorney alleges unlawful conduct by the career staff at the General Services Administration in handling or in handing over transition documents to the special. Own or control the records in question. But Langhoffer says Mueller's team has extensively used materials in question, including portions that are susceptible to claims of privilege. The Trump transition team lawyer argued the actions impair the ability of future presidential transition teams to candidly discuss policy and internal matters that benefit the country as a whole. I mean, this is totally just, this is Big Brother right there. I mean, and again, if you look at the Mueller investigation, they originally supposedly opened up the Mueller investigation to investigate what they call collusion between Russia and President Trump and his transition team in affecting the elections toward a favorable outcome for President Trump. This is what this originally supposedly was about. But if you look at it, it's been almost 2 years. They really never came out with anything. So now they just continually go after President Trump. This is not about Russian collusion or Russian collaboration or whatever. It's not even about that. It's about trying to get President Trump out of office because he is devastating to their case for world government. And this is where it pisses me off when I see people on regular media, social media, and so on, who attack President Trump, say he's a racist, say he's a misogynist, and all of these other preposterous things, or that he's mentally unstable, when half of these people can't even probably multiply, but they want to attack President Trump, who's running the greatest country in the world and has so many different jobs and responsibilities and obligations on a daily and hourly basis that their head would probably blow up if they tried to do the same thing and carry on the same responsibilities. So, you know, it really irks me when these people just attack Trump really on no basis other than what the mainstream media feeds them, because these people just listen to the regurgitating communist news network and they just believe whatever they say because it fits into their narrative of hating Trump. So these emails, though, according to Zero Hedge, could shed light on a lot of details leading up to former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn's communications with Russian Ambassador Sergei Kislyak, with whom Flynn had several call-to-call discussions to discuss, remember, the sanctions that they were talking about that President Obama at the time put upon Russia because they were saying that Russia was trying to affect the elections. And so that's why Flynn was calling to try to say, look, you know, don't overreact to these sanctions. Just be patient. You know, please don't retaliate. I mean, it was close to President Trump coming into office and they just didn't want Obama rocking the boat, which is what he was trying to do. And as well as there was an upcoming at that time Security Council vote on whether or not to condemn Israel's building of settlements, which the Obama administration was preparing to allow to go through because President Trump is very, very anti-Israel. And the New York Times then reported in early December that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of Israel asked the Trump transition team to lobby other countries to help Israel. And this was according to New York Times. It says, according to prosecutors, on December 22nd, Mr. Flynn discussed with Mr. Kiselyak an upcoming United Nations Security Council vote on whether to condemn Israel's building of settlements. At the time, the Obama administration was preparing to allow a Security Council vote on the matter. Investigators have learned that Mr. Flynn and Mr. Kushner took the lead in those efforts, but Mueller's team has emails that show Mr. Flynn saying he would work to kill the vote, the people briefed on the matter said. And then in Politico, they reported that Jared Kushner continued to use a private email account that had been set up during the transition to communicate with fellow administration officials during Trump's first 9 months. However, it was used to send less than 100 emails, mostly consisting of quips about news items and minor commentary. Big difference between him and Hillary Clinton and her private email service, which were being used to pay for play to do back channel deals, basically illegal ones with other countries. And a lot to do with the Iranian one deal and all that. So there's a big difference there between that. And Politico also noted that Kushner's use of a private email account was part of a larger pattern of Trump administration aides using personal email accounts for government business, it states. This is Politico. Kushner allegedly used private account to communicate with Steve Bannon, Rince Priebus, Gary Kahn, and Josh Raffel. Buried deep within the report, however, is that there is no indication that Kushner has shared any sensitive or classified material on his private account, or that he relies on his private email account more than his official White House account to conduct government business. Aides said he prefers to call or text over using emails. So right there, it just goes to show you, it's saying that he wasn't using them for classified reasons. But, if you really think about it, if they understood and they know that the deep state was, spying on them and everything, why would they want to use the official ones, basically, if they weren't using classified, and if they weren't talking about classified things, they were using private emails. But there was nothing wrong with that. And in November, the Senate Judiciary Committee said that Kushner failed to turn over relevant documents pertaining to a Russian backdoor overture and dinner invite, as well as emails received from WikiLeaks Committee Chairman Chuck Grassley and ranking member Senator Dianne Feinstein, wrote in a letter to Kushner's attorney saying, "We appreciate your voluntary cooperation with the committee's investigation, but the production appears to have been incomplete." Then the article goes on. It says, according to the leaked information, Kushner allegedly neglected to disclose the Alexander Torshin, a powerful Russian central banker and former senator with ties to both President Vladimir Putin and Russian organized crime, had reached out to the campaign with a dinner invite and offered to connect with Trump and Putin. Kushner, who was on the email chain, reportedly instructed junior campaign aides to rebuff the meeting. As reported by NBC, it says Kushner rebuffed the request after receiving a lengthy email exchange about it between a West Virginia man and Trump campaign aide Rick Dearborn, the source said. So he rebuffed it. But, of course, the left isn't going to say that. Questions raised by Kushner's attorney over executive privilege by creating a privilege log to segregate communications. Says, if, as you suggest, Mr. Kushner was aware of, for example, any attempts at Russian interference in 2016 presidential election, then presumably there would be few communications concerning many of the persons identified, the letter reads, asking Kushner to turn over all responsive documents by November 27th. And that was reported out of Politico. According to lawmakers, Kushner suggested providing some documents might implicate the president's executive privilege. In their letter, they asked Lowell, which was his attorney, to resolve those issues and produce documents or create a privilege log to detail over which documents the president is asserting executive privilege. It's funny, too, in how how meticulous they are over this. But at the same time, they'll let Hillary Clinton and Huma Abedin go through and basically clean out, any personal stuff. And you can kind of oversight. Obviously, they went through there and would have erased, any type of emails and confidential stuff that they wouldn't want anybody to know about. So you can see the different standard that they use for President Trump and his transition team, as opposed to Hillary Clinton and her team. Now, Grassley and Feinstein also say Kushner declined to produce documents connected to his security clearance applications, citing their confidentiality. The lawmakers said they intend to take Lowe up on a separate request to visit his office to review documents in person, but they said the committee would not waive its request to obtain its own copies, responded by stating that they had provided the Judiciary Committee with all relevant documents that had to do with Mr. Kushner's calls, contacts, or meetings with Russians during the campaign transition, which was the request, adding that Kushner had told the committee they would be open to additional requests for information. So, it goes to show you that President Trump and his team and Kushner and all them were cooperating. They were going to make sure separate anything that was under presidential privilege. They wanted, to make sure that that some of that stuff fell under that it would not be just given out without any thought, basically. And the transition team argued that it could be a violation of the Fourth Amendment, which protects against unreasonable searches and seizures. Corey Langhofer, the counsel to Trump for America, wrote in Saturday's letter that the GSA did not own or control the records in question. The transition attorney said they discovered the unauthorized disclosures by the GSA on December 12th and 13th and raised concerns with special counsel's office. And it just goes on to say that Langhofer also wrote that some of those records obtained by the special counsel's office from the GSA have been leaked to the press by unknown persons, and argued that the actions impair the ability of future presidential transitions teams to candidly discuss policy and internal matters of the country as a whole. And then it says, given the reported use of private email accounts by Jared Kushner and other transition team members, it stands to reason that if Robert Mueller's team finds anything of interest sent to or from said accounts, they will become subject to a full review as part of the ever-expanding investigation. So, again, they're continuing to try to, get the Trump administration to try to find some kind of vain attempt to impeach him based on this Russian collusion still, which is a big nothing burger, basically, just like anything else that they've tried to do against President Trump. It's all failed. I always jokingly call him the Teflon Don because of that reason. But he's basically been standing strong, and they've basically not been able to throw anything at him that That's right. Under the guise of stopping gun violence and genocide, that county commissioner there made a request to the United Nations to bring peacekeeping troops into Chicago. These people are insane. And if you've ever done any investigation on the United Nations, and I'll go over that sometime, but these people, have been accused all around the world of raping children, spreading deadly diseases, murdering protesters, unarmed protesters at that, overthrowing elected leaders, waging war on Africans who don't want to live under a Soviet-backed dictator, all kinds of atrocities. Bring to Chicago, really? Where's Rahm Emanuel? These people are all crooks. But friends, I'm going to sign off for right now. I've got some other things to take care of real quick, but I do appreciate you listening to the program. For Six Semper Tyrannis News, I'm Mark Matheny saying protect your own rights, because if you don't, certainly no one else will. Certainly Big Brother will not protect your rights. They're the ones trying to take them away most of the time. So you've got to be aware of that. You've got to be studious. You've got to be aware of your surroundings. You've got to understand what's going on around you so you can make informed and intelligent decisions concerning your life. I appreciate you listening to the program. You can check me out at Six Semper Tyrannis News, my website, and also on my Facebook page as well under Mark Matheny. Thank you for listening. You have a great day.